Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this December the 3rd on the West Coast, now December the 4th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to also welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network. I may have a surprise for you guys later on. I had to go back and listen to a clip from Drew Rain's show yesterday. He was on my show last night, in case you missed it. You missed one heck of a show. We had a great time, and he was telling us about the interference with his show. Some jackbooted thugs decided that they were going to play some sounds of chickens and Indian war drums. And I think I even heard a mountain lion sort of let out a sort of a growl at the end of it. But I located that clip, and it's worth listening to just for the experience. It shows how desperate they are to stop the truth from coming out. I'm going to move right along here. Before we bring on tonight's guest, I want to just let you know that we're going to dedicate this whole show to a group of people that come from 574 different planets and a 575th one waiting in the wings to join the United Galactic Federation, Galaxy of Hendon. I've talked about them frequently on the show, and we're going to dedicate the show to them tonight, primarily because we don't often do that, and they have been helping mankind for many, many years, and this has been kept secret from us, and in order to acknowledge in a more personal way the work they've been doing from our listening audience and from our hearts, I thought we would start off by sharing some music with them. They are Christians in faith, and Jesus has been to many of their planets throughout our galaxy, throughout the solar system. So our experience has been shared by others throughout the galaxy, and whether you are aware of it or not, they are Christians, and they have evolved way beyond us spiritually and with all the spiritual gifts that go along with that, technologically. And I'm sure their heart centers are opened wide to the wonders of the universe. And so I'm going to start off with a musical piece for them. And I hope they enjoy this as much as I hope you do. Thank you. Larry Carlton's version of White Christmas, and that featured Larry Carlton on the guitar and a wonderful pianist known to the jazz world as Clare Fischer. Clare being a man, actually, just so you know. Over at BBS, if you're listening, I'm hearing some music in the background. Wonder if you can check out the source of that. It doesn't sound bad. It's just it's not supposed to be playing right now. So might be an open studio mic. Anyway, it's the time right now for us to bring on our esteemed guest. He's with us every Friday. He's been a weekly guest ever since Evident Footprint started back in 2006. And he is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher. And he is my very good friend, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Don. Thank you. Nice to be with you.
You too. I hope you got to hear that music. I know sometimes it's a little bit difficult over the phone to make out what's going on, the nature of communications these days.
No, actually, it came through very nicely this evening, and it was a very nice piece. I enjoyed it.
Okay. By any chance, Jim, do you have any music playing in the background?
No, actually, I don't have anything playing.
Okay.
Maybe and I can't hear it, so I'm not sure where it's coming from.
Yeah, I've got on headphones, so I'm getting a little bit of it. But nonetheless, it's my freak ears. What can I say? I hear silence. Okay, I can tell you what key it's in. Well, Jim, we didn't plan on anything tonight, but here we are at the culmination of several months, actually most of this past year. We've been talking about consciousness. We've been talking about the production of power and the different ways that things are held back from us, knowledge of advanced technologies, certainly, I think, simple matters such as how to think, how to learn, how to cope with life, how to cope with society, how to cope with all the evil. I mean, that's one thing we're not taught. We're sort of taught to accept it. We're given this false promise that it's always being overcome. And I can go on and on about the topics that we talked about, certainly basic consciousness and how we fit into the whole scheme of things in a universal context. And more recently, we've been talking about more ethereal topics, the Tesla wave discovery that was probably used for a lot of weapons, space weapons and military weapons here on Earth's surface, and is being used in modified fashion against humanity for a variety of purposes, some which we've already mentioned. Here we are, we're just a few weeks away from a new year again, and I was wondering if you felt like talking about space and some of the realities out there, what we know about some of the planets and the technologies that exist, civilizations that exist, those sorts of things. Anything inspire you this evening?
Well, I've always been interested in outer space. There's no question about that. As a matter of fact, I can remember so clearly, you know, when I was quite young, the interest that I had and the hopes that I had for future very different than the one we have at the moment. But it's funny you should bring that topic up, because one of my favorite things as a kid was visiting the Hayden Planetarium in New York City, and watching the Christmas show where they talked about the arrival of a sort of celestial event, you know, that was perceived, you know, on Earth as the Star of Bethlehem and all this kind of stuff. I really thought that was an amazing presentation, and that whole place had an atmosphere that was so incredible. I mean, for me, it was anyway. I don't even know how to verbalize it. Really, luckily, it remains one of my most cherished memories. Being inside the Hayden Planetarium and looking at all of the different displays that they had. And the original projector that they had in there, and of course the huge domed ceiling, it was just an amazing experience for me. And to be honest with you, the fact that they tore that wonderful old building down and replaced it with this horrible monstrosity, I felt so badly about it that I never went back there. I just haven't been able to get up the courage to change the original memories and the original feelings by looking at whatever the modern.
Well, we seem to have lost our guest. If you're listening there, Don, if you can restore. Okay, very good. He's getting a hold of Jim Murray. Okay, that happens sometimes. Didn't sound like anything threatening, but Jim will be right back with us, I'm sure. Now that we've sort of dealt with this background music thing, and we're waiting for Jim to come back, I will say that I'm hoping that we talk about some things that we haven't discussed in a while in regard to what we know about other planets, the construction that's going on a few planets as we speak. And it's known throughout the galaxy that this is going on. So it's kind of interesting that despite what we're being told about the space race, if you want to call it that, there seems not to be a concern about a space race right now. And you have to ask yourself, why is that? We used to always be in competition with the Russians and the Chinese. And, of course, that seemed to go away just before the turn of the new millennium. And there seemed to be a lot of publicity, a lot of focus on the Mir space station, the International Space Station. We saw many objects being released on film, NASA film, floating around space that they identified as ice crystals, and we know better than that. So it looks like we have Jim back right now. Are you with us, Jim?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was floating around in space there. I just didn't even know I was off the air. I kept right on talking, so I have no clue what you heard and what you didn't.
Well, you began describing what a special place the planetarium was when you were a young boy, and you were grateful that it was something that you could experience because it had an influence on you. And at that point, you just went into cyberspace, and we didn't hear you anymore.
Well, it's a shame that that happened. I was kind of on a roll emotionally, but other than that, at least I'm back. I guess that's the best way to look at it.
Yes. Well, I was alluding to the fact that here we go. We're having to repeat ourselves again. you and I were probably going to discuss some of the things we know is going on other planets. I've been getting some very interesting information, which seems to be corroborated from other sources. A lot of activity on the moon currently. Specific information about Mars and how one gets to Mars and what is to be seen up there right now, which we've talked about in the past, and all of this is it's going way beyond being confirmed. We're getting all kinds of details. So I didn't have to be abducted to know this. You know, I didn't have to go through some sort of a time tunnel or a portal or a Stargate, as they like to call them. There are ways that one can take one's consciousness anywhere in the whole universe and check out the sites, if you will. But I was in the process of, or we were in the process of possibly discussing some of the concepts in terms of how they have been converted to use in outer space and advancing technologies that you may be willing to discuss that you know about that we haven't talked about. So what say you, Jim Murray?
Well, there's probably an infinite number of subjects that are parallel to that suggestion. As far as my own consciousness is concerned, I think I've mentioned that even when I was pretty young, I had a lot of, I don't know what you want to call them, futuristic inklings or visionary input from sources beyond myself, you know, concerning various things like space flight and the true structure of space and things of that sort. And I've always looked upon reality as being a bunch of nested realities, such that there are higher and higher octaves of expression that continue on outward and away from us, so that when you really have an understanding of what's going on, it's like reaching another layer, if you will, that is related to the first one by the same laws, but naturally they're going to be a little bit different in their application because of the difference of the environment and the difference of the conditions of each of these so-called layers. And I believe that consciousness goes on indefinitely. And when you reach these other levels of understanding, it's an awe moment. And that's what I think we should be striving for, you know, is determining the farthest point of evolution in our own consciousness that we can muster, and doing so with the realization that there's always more. I know I had, as a real young kid, I spent a lot of time sitting alone in my attic, playing with toys and things like that. But I also did an awful lot of meditating, even when I was very young. And I used to meditate on some really strange stuff for a kid. And I'm talking about a young kid. I was, I don't know, six perhaps at the best, when I used to think about some of this stuff. And I used to worry about understanding it, you know what I mean? It was like I really wanted to know the meaning of these things. And one of the things I thought about an awful lot was the concept of an infinite space. And as a matter of fact, I still think about that, except I've just accepted it, because the finite mind can't really comprehend any form of infinity. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it just becomes an open-ended contemplation. The other thing I used to contemplate a whole lot was death, because as a kid, so many people in my life died. It was really unbelievable. But it started with my grandfather, and whom I was very close to. And so naturally, I was thinking about that a lot, and what does it mean to die? And you know, how does death fit into the scheme of things? And one of the things I used to contemplate was, if death was really the end of everything, then what is it like not to be? And you try contemplating not being, and the interesting thing about it is you can't do it.
Unless you go into politics.
What?
Unless you go into politics.
Oh, well, yeah. But that's
simple.
It's not only simple, it's totally unnatural, so.
Yeah, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yes, you did. But anyway, the point I wanted to make was that, you know, these early contemplations on subjects that were so obtuse to the norm just set my mind up, I guess, in such a way that I spent the rest of my life doing the same thing. And I'm still doing it. And I don't find anything wrong with that. As a matter of fact, I think that, you know, this urge to evolve or this urge to move forward and better yourself is one of the things that's missing in our society. And I could never understand why that's the case. So many people are more or less, I don't know if they're given up or they just don't know how to think, or they don't want to be bothered with it or whatever. They just kind of mosey through life, you know, stuck in the same mire with no interests and just contemplating things like sports and beer and whatever else they think about. And the really important things that we could be applying ourselves to are just ignored. And so in that respect, I've been a loner most of my life. And I really rejoice when I cross paths with a person like yourself, for instance, and some of my very dear friends that don't have those restrictions. You know, it's like finding a gold nugget, you know, in a huge field of undesirable objects. But anyway... So those are the kinds of things that that I'd like to see a lot of people aspire towards. And you and I have tried to do that on the show, which I think is one of the cool things. You know, it's like, why should there be restrictions? You know, and if we're going to recognize restrictions, then the truth of the matter is we're the ones who put them there, because there really aren't any. And you were talking about the interesting concept before of using your consciousness to visit these other worlds. And, you know, I contemplate doing that and have done that to a minor extent. But I've had a lot of intercourse with Native Americans, with individuals from other countries, particularly South America in this case. And actually, people with highly developed spiritual attributes have been doing that for eons. And a good point, Ivan Sanderson, who was a dear friend of mine years ago, he was fascinated by the tribes that he came across in the wilds of Africa, that knew things about the solar system and the moon and even distant points in space where there were, you know, double sun systems and things of that, or double star systems and things of that nature. And he used to ask them, well, how do you know these things? And the witch doctors, or whatever you want to call them, just openly said, well, we go there. And you notice they didn't climb into a rocket to do it. I mean, they use their minds and their spirits.
Yeah, yeah, that's the essence of what we've been talking about for the past 11 months or so. I want to just backtrack a little bit. You were talking about the way you or the way one enters a different state of consciousness, and it's really not like you're moving someplace so much as it is that you're expanding or you're opening up, and what's out there comes to you at the same time. It's sort of like the way our visitors, say those with Project Alliance that I referred to at the top of the show, they fold space and they can transcend a very long distance in an extremely short amount of time. Well, it's beyond the physics that we're familiar with in mainstream scientific circles, and yet they do it effortlessly. They can program it. They read frequencies. They travel those grids, those ley lines, if you want to call them those, and they just do it. There's no need for secrecy about it. There's no need to lie about what they do. They just do it, and they acknowledge it. Now, they're probably careful about letting the information out in terms of how it is, how this technology is operating or how it's developed, and because many would use it for nefarious purposes, and there are those out there that we have encountered who are more malevolent who also know how to do that. So I think they're, because we're not spiritually awake enough, we will not get that information until we stop murdering millions of innocent people and starving people and poisoning them and all the other devious things that they do to control the society. It's really an indication of extreme fear and insecurity, if you ask me. It's what their own doctors call insanity. And it's of a very evil nature. It has no way of coming back other than to start all over again from the beginning. And we don't have to do that to become conscious. They're not going to be the ones to tell us how to become conscious. They don't want us to be conscious. It's not in their own personal interests to have us be conscious. And yet there are those of our us who are conscious and are others who are striving, and they're sort of stumbling along that path because there are all those charlatans out there that want to lead them in a different direction. Mask the truth about the real nature of the universe and the higher sciences, and not just the physical sciences, but even the spiritual sciences. And I think as we develop as beings and we become more conscious and we are able to put this into practice, we evolve. If you want to talk about evolution, we can evolve upward and become intelligent and become discerning and exercise all of the spiritual gifts that go along with that state of beingness. And like you said, Jim, most people are not even aware of that. If they are at all, it's something they see in a spooky movie on a Friday or Saturday night. And
well, I would like to point out the fact that just because they're not aware of something doesn't mean they aren't doing it. And
yes,
that's part of the key to kicking yourself in the pants and getting out of this this deadlock situation of, you know, just coasting. The interesting thing is part of it has to do with imagination. Part of it has to do with the normal the normal powers of the mind, which we actually use every day for other purposes. And for some reason, maybe it's simply because we've been taught to ignore it, we've never applied it in the directions that you and I talk about so casually. But the truth of the matter is people actually use the same mechanisms all the time. Like, for instance, anybody can picture in their minds the layout of their home, for instance. And if they do that, they go to a particular room, like let's say the living room, sit down mentally in your favorite chair and literally look at the room around you. And I don't know if people bother to do stuff like that, but if they do, and they certainly have the ability to do that, just by using the faculty of memory, the mere fact that they recall that and can actually go through a little exercise like that of closing their eyes, visualizing the living room, sitting in their favorite chair, mentally glancing at the TV, perhaps they got a stereo or something in there, a bookcase, you know, whatever's around them, they may not realize it, but using that faculty and using it often is the same mechanism that you use to do the things that we're talking about. Because the minute that you decide to go to that mental living room, there is a transcendence involved. And that imagery comes to you. Now, you may say, oh, well, I'm just remembering that. But, and perhaps that's one way of looking at it, but in actuality, you are using the powers of your brain and your mind to put yourself in an environment which is essentially a hologram, and it's stored, in my opinion, beyond the confines of the mind, of the brain. The mind extends beyond yourself. And when you get used to using it in that respect, then what's the difference of saying, okay, let's go to Mars this afternoon, or let's go to the moon and look around? Now, people say, oh, that's silly, because I'm just imagining what the moon is like. I've never been there. But that's how everything starts, is with the imagination and with imagining. And once you really get into this kind of stuff, you wind up pulling in images that are not your own. And you're visiting those things despite the fact that they were not originally part of your memory structure. And that's an ability that human beings have had forever. This is what shamans do. This is what spiritual people do. This is what is absolutely natural to more primitive peoples. Don, I'm reading a couple of fascinating books that I managed to locate after months and months of searching. And they're both about South America. One of them, in fact, is a journal of one of the people who went off looking for the lost Fawcett expedition to try and find out what became of Colonel Fawcett, his son, and the friend that was with them. And the other one is about a young Frenchman that decided that he wanted to explore the upper reaches of the Amazon, and put together his own expedition back in the 30s. But the thing that's fascinating about both books is that the things that they report in common, and yet they the two authors probably didn't know each other. And the thing that they report throughout both these books is the behavior of these isolated tribes in these areas that they wound up visiting, and how they have these communal experiences as a group, as a tribe, or certainly as a village. And they go off on these mental trips, or whatever you want to call them, together under the direction or the leadership of the local witch doctor or the local shaman. And it's amazing because that's how they get in touch with nature. That's how they get in touch with their higher selves and with the cosmic consciousness. And it dawned on me when I was listening to that, when I was reading that, that we have replaced that communal experience of primitive man with movie theaters. You know, we all herd in, we pay our money, we sit in the seats, and we go off somewhere by watching images reflecting off a white screen. But in the Amazon, they don't have that luxury, and so they make use of the natural gifts to do the same thing. Now, don't you think that's an interesting thought, that mankind has surrendered a natural gift in return for a visit to the movie theater?
Yeah, which I would define as nothing more than mass mind control. I mean, one can be entertained. What is entertained? You know, distracted? Distracted and in a predictable way or a predetermined way for the purpose of occupying our awaking conscious thoughts with meaningless things. You know? And somehow there's a joy to look forward to that. You know, thank God it's Friday. I can go home and veg out. You know?
Veg out.
Yeah, and that pretty soon, you know, if they pass this Senate Bill 510, you're not even going to be allowed to veg out without Monsanto being involved.
So. Can you imagine that? You know, to me, if that line of thinking doesn't wake up the American people, nothing's going to. Can you imagine some schmuck telling you that you can't raise vegetables in your yard? Well, you know, I mean, that just goes to show you your yard is not your yard to begin with. But the mere fact that they have the gall to take it that far, I mean, what else are they going to tell you? You know, what you can do and what you can't do. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, watching the consciousness that develops out of such situations is sort of like watching concrete grow. You know, it's not very exciting. And it's all designed to induce fear and to seize power. And as long as people fail to realize that it's just a desperate attempt to hold on to an empire that is collapsing, not unlike the three skyscrapers on 9/11. It's collapsing in on itself, and the pretense that everything is okay is going to become a reality, whether they like it or not. Now, they would like us to submit. You know, all these things are designed to cause us to submit to something other than who we are. That's the whole point of this thing. You know, stop and think. You're on a spaceship. You're with the United Galactic Federation, and you're watching what's going on Earth and throughout the galaxy. You're dealing to all kinds of affairs. And you come to this planet and watching what the leaders of the planet are doing to the planet itself and all the various life forms on it, you not only would you conclude that these people are insane, but this has got to be the cesspool of the universe in terms of planetary leadership. There's nothing else to call it. These are criminals, pedophiles, perverts, liars, and the greediest beings in existence. I mean, these people so much want to be God, so much want to be the creator, the new creator on the block of the universe, that they will take a one-celled being take it into a laboratory and turn it into millions of different varieties of other one-celled beings in the hope that somehow they can become as intelligent as the one-celled being. I think everything's the opposite of what they do or what they say. So in reality, they're striving to become that one-celled being, as if that's a rise in consciousness.
It might be.
Yes. And you know, the limited view of science, it probably won't be long before they tell us the whole universe is a laboratory and that it's contained inside a building where all of this is replicated again, you know. Where the universe that we perceive, in whatever amount that might be from person to person, is nothing more than the inside of an aquarium tank or a terrarium. And that outside that exists yet another universe. In a way, that's how big the universe is. It just keeps going on to infinity.
Yeah, but the good thing about all that is that minds of that caliber are not in the position to even imagine what the real construction of the universe is, never mind duplicate it. And all you got to do is realize that fact. And also, you know, the other thing that's interesting is that all beings, from the divine being right down to those one-celled creatures you were talking about, reveal their true nature, their true intent, and their true purpose in life, if you will, or in reality, by what they do. And there's no comparison between what these subhuman, mindless freaks do and what and the caliber of what they create compared to the acts of creation of the divine being. There's just no comparison. And in terms of the universe and all its inherent beauty and all of the things that that flow from that, it's always well ordered. It's always a reflection of beauty and goodness, and there's always the associated concept of infinite growth or infinite change. And if you look at the other end of the spectrum, like just, let's call it what you call it, the cesspool activities that go on here, it's exactly the opposite. There's never anything beautiful. There's never anything expanding. As a matter of fact, it's always being contracted so that the world, is, as it is perceived, is forced to shrink, and your experience is more and more limited. There's always evil that comes from it, and containment and control. So you don't have to be overly bright to see the difference, because the authors of the activities always sign their signature or always reveal their signature one way or another. And that's something you should bear in mind. You know, we should bear in mind. There's no way that you can compare the two to one another, even though they think they're gods because they've attained a certain amount of financial control. They're actually not. And as far as your other comment is concerned, you know, that they like to imagine that they are creating something in the process of what they're doing, that's fine. But the world that they have manufactured here can be gone in a puff, in an instant. And one of the reasons that I enjoy studying lost civilizations, let's call it that, is because it's a constant reminder, at least to me, that all of this is so transitory, and all of the imagined greatness that these people perceive in terms of the falsehoods that they've created, you know, the power associated with, let's say, running a city or owning a city or whatever, is an illusion. it's even an illusion to them. That's the amazing thing. And, you know, all these ancient ruins that are in the jungles and in the deserts and in other wastelands around the world give adamant testament to the fact that that can happen at any time for any number of reasons. And this illusion can be penetrated and reduced to nothingness, which is really what it is. So if you bear all these things in mind, then I think that it gives significant impetus for us to say, well, okay, what doesn't perish? What is the real substance of reality, and what should we embrace and put as our highest priority in life? And as soon as you really bring it down to the least common denominator, I'm afraid you're forced to look at the fact that it's the fundamental things, you know, like natural beauty, spirituality, and evolution. And I'm not talking about Darwin's version. I'm talking about evolution of spirit, evolution of mind. Those are the only things that persist.
Yes, Jim, I want to comment on what you just said. Every great prophet, every great emissary that the Creator sent to not only this world but to other worlds had a similar message to share, and it was based on the truth. And I think probably the most frequent admonition that would have been given by those prophets and those wise men, those messengers, would probably be in two words: know thyself. What you're describing is all the opposite of knowing oneself, knowing the true nature of the being provides the leadership that people are clamoring for right now. I get a lot of people asking questions, and I hear this on other shows. What do we do? Or you read this in emails. Where are we going to find a leader? And that's assuming that the person is assuming that they already know themselves. They know who they are, so they know what kind of leader it should be. Yet the leader they're looking for is within them. Each one can be a leader. In a society that empowers its people, such as in the United Galactic Federation and all the many planets that are represented by that group of people that are working together for a common cause of universal significance, they don't have to argue about reality when they have a better grasp of it than we do down here. They're every waking moment is spent on exercising or acting out whatever they do with that consciousness, with that knowledge of who they are. So there's never a doubt about that from the get-go. The issue is bringing or assisting others in achieving that level of consciousness. They are that conscious that they know that that's something that has a purpose for them to assist others. It's not that they want to control others in doing that, but they want to invite others to the possibility of moving into a new state of being, and a real state of being.
I'm glad you focused on that word "real," because the very notion that people on our planet are always looking for a leader tells you that they are totally disconnected from that portion of themselves. And that is done by design, because if you stop and think about it, that craving for leadership is really the mechanism that powers politics. And those subhumans that make use of that inadequacy in modern man are the ones that perpetuate its existence and throw themselves out there as, you know, potential leaders or the illusion of being leaders, you know, so that they can continue playing their dirty game. So if you think about it for a minute, if you can overcome this ridiculous desire to have a leader and realize that it's your own capabilities that you really want to develop, be your own leader. If everybody was their own leader in the true sense of the term and in a spiritual way, places like Washington, D.C. and all the scum that lives there would literally disintegrate. Because they can't function if everybody would find that aspect of themselves.
Yes.
They would be obsolete.
Yeah, that's something that we stress quite often on the show here. And while you were talking, I was looking at this from the perspective of the elders. And I, in no way can I put myself on a par with the elders other than to contemplate what types of decisions they have to make when they have 26,000 people on a mothership, when they have thousands of ships, not just around the Earth, but more in other parts of the solar system and the galaxy. There's all kinds of things going on, and the responsibility that these men have is unimaginable. And when you consider that, I don't know the average age, but I could take a guess and say it's somewhere between 500 and 750 years old. Just that in and of itself says that they're doing something right. We can't seem to live that long down here. I mean, they can't get 574 bankers to agree to something, let alone planets. And the billions and billions of people that come with that. It's when you contemplate these things, it really is pathetic what's going on down here on planet Earth. So I'm agreeing with you in what you said.
Yeah, I realize that. Well, the only thing that I can figure is that it's like the old age-old question, you know, does a fish realize that he's in water? You know, perhaps it's a question as simple as that for most people. They're so immersed in the garbage that's been presented to them that they, as they look around, they honestly can't see that there's anything better. And that's tragic. Because it's not that difficult to stick your head up out of the water and say, hey, there's a world out there. But for some reason, they don't do it. And the only thing that I've ever been able to establish as an explanation for that reluctance is the fact that, like Reich said, you know, even though they're in misery, it's a misery they're familiar with, and the concern or the discomfort of trying to explore something outside of that is more of a burden to them than putting up with what they know. And so they just say, well, this is life. This is how it's supposed to be. They glide along hoping for the best.
Yes. Now, we're talking about other states of consciousness, and you brought up some very good points as to how one can sort of exercise their creative juices, if you want to call it that. When you learn to recognize things around you, you begin to change your perspective on everything. And that exercise that Jim was talking about, where you just close your eyes and visualize the things in a room and try to recall them or perceive them as they exist. Ultimately, that would be a goal, is to try to see them, try to become so aware of your environment that you now look to become more aware of what's outside that room he was describing. And that's what happens. If you can't do it in the room you're in, you're never going to be able to perceive what's outside of you. And that very process frees you, liberates you from the matrix. This box that you're in that says you can do this and you can't do that, which is all contrary to your human nature and your spiritual nature as you were created to be. It's like wearing mufflers or earmuffs, gloves, 20 hats, 30 coats, hip boots, galoshes, the whole thing, just covering yourself up so nothing can come to you or nothing can come out of you except labor, on which they put an imaginary financial value that you strive to live up to. And when you become useless, you're discarded and replaced with another being that shows more of a propensity to be able to fulfill that requirement. It's called slavery. And so you're willingly being slaves to a system that is intended to have you be just that. We're talking about the reality, the changing universe. It's changing every moment. It's changing. It's changed trillions of times since the show began, and it's going to continue to do that. And yet we have to hold on. We have to have something to anchor us, not realizing that we already have a ball and chain and shackles on us.
Well, that whole anchoring process that you just talked about is actually part of the illusion. I mean, take a very simple example that probably happens tens of thousands of times a day in the modern world. You have a couple that are in love, and they want their own home. So they go and they find a house. They go through all of the mishmash that's necessary to qualify for a loan. And then they buy the house, supposedly. And so now, you know, they feel a certain measure of accomplishment, and they have something to call their own. But that right there is the seeds of the entire illusion, because they don't own anything, and it was all done without giving them anything. And once you start to realize that the whole world operates like that, it's no different than watching some magician on a stage who's amusing you with sleight of hand and picking your wallet at the same time, I might add. So, you know, if people would just come to grips with those basic things, the freedom that would come from doing that is very, very liberating. But it's so uncomfortable to contemplate that notion as being true that they won't do it. What do you mean I don't own my own home? Well, it's very simple. If you really owned your own home, could they tax you? How can they tax you? How can anybody tax you for something that's yours? I mean, it's absurd. Well, you know, it's, I mean, that alone should send a message, but it doesn't for some reason. Nobody can get past it. Oh, well, the government is always taxing, you know, somebody. This, well, what kind of an excuse is that? I mean, you're lending them the ability to do it just by thinking that way. How can they tax you for something you own? It's ridiculous. And if you really think you own it, just don't play the game and see how long you're occupying that structure. It's whisked away from you instantaneously because it's never yours to begin with.
In a deeper sense, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, in a deeper sense, those that impose this draconian system on us are also deluded into thinking that they own everything. They own nothing. in a higher sense.
Oh, of course not. I mean, the American Indian was totally blown away by the European concept of land ownership, because they were smart enough and in tune with reality enough to say, wait a minute, how can you own the land? You know, we're just happy to be able to occupy it, but we realize that we don't own it. And, you know, the European mentality, which was already submerged in that type of surrender for hundreds of years, just came over here and ignored all of the more realistic approach to reality and just imposed their will on everything. And it's to their own detriment, too, which is the interesting thing.
You see, now, while the civilizations of the earth while the civilizations on the earth were spinning their wheels in this insane game, the rest of the galactic society was progressing. They were expanding in consciousness. We seem to be putting a lot of value into technology, though we do not apply it as it should be applied to life. But they were also expanding in their knowledge of the universe. And as a result, the technological gifts were given to them for that reason, for their ability to maintain those with integrity. And that's, again, the opposite of what we have going on down here.
Oh, for sure.
It's evident everything is collapsing. I mentioned the moon and Mars. You know, there are over 700 domes on the moon. And I'm not just speaking about the dark side of the moon. There are at least 113 structures which have been built there, hard structures, which are not domes, but are serving various purposes. And I can, with authority, say that they are not ours, that we have been warned to stay off of the moon, despite what we hear NASA tell us, you know, the publicity of promoting NASA's program, the evil that we all experience as researchers and talk show hosts and guests is a direct result of NASA's involvement in everything, and it's because of the reptilian presence on this planet, see? And it has a lot to do with why we are told to stay off the moon. So they're focusing their efforts on Mars. There is life on Mars. There is a contingency of people there, thousands of people from planet Earth who have been taken up there. There is building going on, construction going on. They have water. They have shrubs and trees and plants and animals. Some animals that resemble animals down here, especially the political variety. They have a being that I talked about on a show earlier this week that attacked General Jeremiah. He described it as a Neanderthal. Now, you have to question, what kind of sadistic experiments are they carrying out there on Mars that they would revive the DNA of a Neanderthal man?
Oh, well, that's easy to answer. That'll be our next presidential candidate here.
Touché.
Well, anyway, it's amazing that that life is what it has become. But I agree with you 100%. It cannot last, and it won't. It just will not. You cannot indefinitely contain the creative impulse and the urge, the hunger is even a better word than urge, the absolute hunger to move forward. I mean, it's actually manifesting to the point right now on this planet where it's very noticeable to everybody who's who's got even a smidgen of advanced consciousness, that the feeling of the unsettled feeling and the need for leadership and the need for a higher expression or a higher fulfillment in life is just bursting out all over the place. I mean, look at the traditional religions. They're all in upheaval because they don't supply anything. They don't take you anywhere. The political system is an absolute disaster, and I think everybody, almost everybody, is certainly aware of that. If you're not, there's something wrong with you. And as far as our everyday life is concerned, it is essentially a jail sentence. That you don't have to be overly bright to realize that. If you, 'cause all of the different movies about prisons, all you got to do is look at one of those films and compare it with the life that you have here on the outside, and you know there's such an amazing parallel that it's unbelievable. All of your so-called freedoms are illusions.
Yes.
That's all got to change, and it's going
yes.
to.
Absolutely, I'm in agreement with you, Jim. I want to play another song before we sign off. We're not going to sign off yet, so stay with us. I'm going to dedicate this to the folks from Project Alliance, and I'm going to name a few people. Pardon me if I forget your names. These are the Americanized versions: Karen, Bob, and Bill, Sheila, David, Zachariah, Crenshaw, Sylvia, Jill, Kayla, and General Jeremiah, and many thousands of other people that listen to the show and assist in broadcasting it to 2,005 planets. This is a bit premature because we don't celebrate Christmas yet, but I'm going to ask the listening audience to imagine that you are listening to this from space, where our visitors are listening to this show. And imagine what this music means or would mean to you if you were out in space hearing it for the first time. This is another Larry Carlton track from the same album that I played a track earlier, Christmas at My House, Mr. Larry Carlton. Well, Jim, if anybody was able to go outside themselves for a moment or two, what do you think they saw? What do you think they felt?
Well, I think that to me, the whole Christmas spirit was always one of love and joy and sharing and seeing the higher purpose in things. And that's the kind of fundamental realization that I think a person from another planet could easily appreciate, even if he wasn't familiar with the story of the Nativity here on Earth. Those are the kinds of spiritual attributes that I think are universal. And so in that regard, Christmas takes on a totally different meaning, and the celebration of it can be appreciated anywhere in the galaxy.
I'll second that. Well, Jim, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being on the show, and thank you very much for your contribution and your wisdom and your discernment. You are one of the most spiritual people I know, and I'm sure the audience feels that as well. And I wish you not just a pleasant night, but a great weekend, and I look forward to your next visit on Evident Footprints. And that'll be
on. So do I, Don, and thank you for those fine wishes. You have a great weekend, too.
Okay. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and tonight's special guest, scientist inventor Jim Murray. I want to thank Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting the show as well. And that clip from Drew Raines, I'll play on Monday when Dr. Atruat joins me. So be watching for that if you haven't heard it. It's hilarious. And I'm sure it's cracking Drew up if he's listening right now. I over at BBS Radio want to thank Don Newsom on the sound tonight. And Donna Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Most of all, I want to thank you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Again, join me Monday when my special guest will be Dr. Atruat. Have a great weekend. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.